to order for Monday, February 16th, and open up a work session for the introduction of committee measures. Is there a motion?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move that LC 652 and LC 2890 be introduced as rules committee measures.
Okay, and LC 652 and LC 2890 will be introduced as committee measures at the request of Richard Lake. Any discussion? Any objections?
Madam Chair, I'm sorry.
Yes.
I think it's...
Oh, we need to read what the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, LC 652 recognizes and honors Una Tribe of Mixed Bloods for service to Native Americans of mixed blood throughout United States of America and State of Oregon.
At the request of Richard Lake. Richard Lake.
And then, Madam Chair, members of the committee, LC 2890 modifies public records law exemption from required disclosure of certain personal information of public employees and public body volunteers to remove mandated disclosure upon showing that public interest would require disclosure in particular interest. Requires that certain personal information of home care workers, operators of child care facilities, exempt family child care providers, operators of adult foster homes, and those who have submitted voluntary information in confidence to a public body be maintained confidentially and not disclosed pursuant to public records request. Those are the two LCs for introduction before you today.
Okay.
And before we vote, I want to remind everyone, some of our chairs in the on our dais already know this, of course, but particularly for our new members, that a vote for introducing these as committee members does not indicate your support for the actual measure, and you may withhold the right to vote yay or nay later in the process.
And exactly right. Thank you very much for that clarification, and I agree. Is there any discussion? Any objection? If not, this LC is introduced. Close the work session and open a public hearing on House Bill 2635. Erin, could you please explain the measure?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2635 requires ballot title for measure proposing local option tax to state that estimated tax costs may reflect impact of early payment discounts, compression, and collection rate. The measure takes effect on the 91st day following adjournment, sine die.
Okay, Representative Lively, would you like to come testify on this bill? Great. Could I identify yourself for the record?
Madam Chair, Vice Chair, distinguished members of the committee. My name is John Lively. I'm state rep from District 12, which is the city of Springfield, surrounded by Representative Barnhart's district and Senator Byer's district. So I'm here today to speak with you about House Bill 2635. And so part of what my motivation for this is over the years, as a local elected official and as a volunteer, I've worked in many campaigns regarding local tax levies to support such things as police and fire and libraries, and the list goes on. Conditions change at times. During those levies, though, the voters have multiple questions. But two of those questions, one of those is always, so what's it going to cost me? And a very legitimate question, and we always try to be as fair as we can about accurate what that is, and that's based on information the tax assessor gives us, the value of the levy in relationship to the number of payers. The other one, though, in many cases has to do with, so how much, if we approve this, so how much is the government going to get to spend? How much money will they have? And that's what this measure is directed towards trying to clarify, especially since Measure 5 and more tax districts have issues with compression. That answer to that particular question has become somewhat complex and convoluted. In many cases, then the voters don't have a clear picture. And I do know of a particular case where it was a pretty substantial difference between what the levy measure said is about the dollars that was going to be raised versus what the district or the government entity could spend. And the reason I believe that that's important to offer the chance to clarity is transparency for the voters. I've actually heard some conversations about, but we authorize you to spend this much, and then get in this conversation why you didn't spend that much, or you underspent. Well, in many cases, it's not because they wouldn't have liked to have spent that much. Compression, uncollectibles, discounts all have a part of what ultimately can be collected by the local entity. All this bill does is provides the option that that title that directs to at the amount of the measure could reflect the amount of funds that would be collected based on, once you've subtracted the uncollectibles, compression, and the discounts for taxes. And it provides the option. It's a may. They can do it that way or they can do it the other. But from my standpoint, especially in some districts where compression has become a bigger issue, it's just a more transparent way and a fair way to deal with the taxpayers, I believe. That's it.
Fantastic. Any questions from?
I have a couple of questions.
Yes. Representative Gillian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple quick questions. Thank you. So, yeah, you have to answer my question. And
okay.
The first one was you handled that very well, but I noticed that you recognized the chair and distinguished members.
Oh.
I was wondering about the rest of us.
About what?
The rest of us.
You're all distinguished.
Okay.
I beg your pardon.
Now, my actual question is the language that says requires and then may, in a sense, you may already be able to, but in a way we're encouraging this information, correct?
Madam Chair and Vice Chair Gilliam, so when I went back and reread this title, and the first word I read was requires, and then I read the may, there could be a change we need, because if you look down further in language, it talks about may reflect the impact of early payment discounts, compression, and collection. So the intent always was that the current regulation only be modified to allow them to do that if they chose to do it. But I the title up above where it says requires and then it says may, there's some, I'm not sure how to explain that other than it needs to be corrected.
Any other questions or comments? Thank you very much,
Thank
Representative
Wyman. Sure.
Additional testimony. Is there any other additional testimony on this bill? No. Oh, yes? This is 2635. Hi, and just identify yourself for the record. Thank you.
My name is Wendy Johnson. I'm with the League of Oregon Cities. This is my third week on the job, so I'm really learning property tax in a hurry. But just wanted to support this measure. We did have one question on exactly how the description of the bill was written, because my understanding is that oftentimes there is no calculation of the discount and compression rates and stuff, so it should be like may or may not have that information available when the levy is put forward. The short of it is the League supports having as much notice to the public of what a bond levy is going to look like. Too often people are voting to get a bond through to maybe get the library fixed or whatever it is, and then they learn later that they actually aren't going to collect as much revenue as was requested because of the Measure 5 and Measure 50 limits. And so this bill would go a ways towards providing notice to the public that even if we get this levy, we may not actually get all the revenue that we're requesting because of the compression that will happen or will hit the max with 5 and 50. So we support that. We just want to make sure that it's clear that sometimes it's may or may not. So we weren't sure which way it normally is, but we just would suggest that amendment should you go forward with the bill.
So welcome and congratulations on your new job. I suggest you work with Representative Lively on any amendments that you like to see, and thank you for expressing your support. Any questions? Yes, Leader McLean.
Thank you. I'm reading the amendment here in the insertion of that text. So this bill would require the addition of the words and may reflect the impact of early payment discounts, compression, and the collection rate. Okay, so what is the problem that you're seeking to fix?
Chair Hoyle, Representative McLean. When I read this bill, I quickly checked with some of the other folks in the office. It sounds like oftentimes the assessor will not know how, if the levy actually passes, what the actual reflection would be on the discounts, compression, and collection rates. So it's almost the opposite. I'm not sure that it even may reflect. I was thinking it actually should be may not reflect, because you won't know until all of the rates, you know, the various districts are compiled for that tax year to figure out whether with that levy you will get what the requested amount for the levy was or not.
And follow up. So we have an estimated tax cost. So if, hypothetically speaking, a bond for a new swimming pool is going out, and I think there may be one going out in Prineville, for an example. Is this particular provision, 20 ORS 280.075, supposed to tell the public how much money is supposed to be generated? And if so, then how does the clause that we're adding affect that estimate?
Chair Hoyle, Representative McLean, I believe the ballot measure will say what the tax dollar and cents is requested, and sometimes when they're calculating that, they won't actually be able to bring that dollar in when the Measure 5 and 50 limits hit, and it's difficult to calculate that ahead of time.
May I have some follow-up latitude here? So is this a marketing? Is the League of Oregon Cities seeking to add a clause for marketing purposes, or is there an inaccuracy in the tax estimates that have been previously put forth on ballots measures?
Chair Hoyle, Representative McLean, the league didn't bring this bill forward. We just reviewed it and noticed that it appeared to be a good government bill to provide notice to the public, because we've seen bond measures that have passed, and then the public has been surprised to know that the actual amount recovered wasn't what was thought to be recovered. And so this looked to be like a good notice piece. I'm just not certain that this actually is accurate, because sometimes it may not reflect the discount that would be given if you paid early and the compression and collection rate. I'm getting nods from Representative Barnhart, but that's my understanding. I said I'm very new to the property tax area, but when you're adding, you have the permanent rate for each district, and then you add on top of it a bond levy, which sometimes you're able to collect the full amount of the bond levy, but sometimes that will take you up to the limits, and therefore you don't actually get what was requested in the voters passed as the bond levy because of compression and the limits.
Ms. Johnson, I think a great example is in Eugene and Lane County, we had a number of bond measures on the ballot. Some passed, some didn't. Depending on what passed and what didn't, we hit compression, and so we were not able to collect the full amount on a school bond levy that was put forward that we voted for because it hit compression, which is a complex.
Right.
It's a complex formula, and so what are you saying, that the League of Cities would like to see more transparency to allow people to know that when they vote, they may not be getting all the money that they think they're voting for because of the compression and other taxes that might be happening throughout that jurisdiction?
Chair Hoyle, that's exactly what I'm saying. I'm just not certain that the language that's drafted in the LC reflects what we'd want to see, which is that we're not sure that it would. It says and it may reflect, but it also may not reflect.
So what you're saying is you feel that in concept, the League of Cities
right.
could support this, but there may be some changes in languages you would support, so the bill needs more work.
Perhaps.
And I would suggest that you work with the representative whose bill it is to and come back with some suggested amendments. Mr. Kyler, please identify yourself for the record.
Yes, I will. Chair Hoyle, members of the committee, I'm Alex Kyler. I'm Lane County's Intergovernmental Relations Manager. I apologize for being late. I didn't realize you were going to take this one up first. Lane County did ask for this bill to be introduced. Representative Lively generously accepted our request. It did come out of our experience with ultimately what was success in May of 2013 when we went to Lane County voters and asked them to pass a 55 cent per thousand increase for 5 years for a jail to reopen, to retain beds in the Lane County Jail. I've testified in front of this committee before about the plight of timber counties. I don't think anybody's surprised by that. But what was significant for us in that election was that we actually got a win. We had gone to the voters 14 times before to to try to address various aspects of our public safety system. One of the things that I noticed in that election, because I had a lot to do with writing the ballot question and doing the research for it, was that when we asked the assessor for the estimate that's required under state law, the assessor came back with one number. When we asked the budget officer to help us with some of the materials to support the language in the ballot measure question and subsequently support our information campaign, she came back with a different number. And the difference between those numbers was about $2 million, $2.5 million. The assessor had given us the number of what could be or should be collected in a perfect world. The budget officer said, yeah, but you didn't reflect your experience in actually in collecting the tax, the number of people who take advantage of the discount rate, and the effects of compression. My concern was that it's very difficult in Timber County to pass a measure. And my concern was those voters who noticed the difference between what was said in the pamphlet or the question and what is said in the campaign materials, if you will, the informational materials, was divergent. And so it sets up this dynamic which bleeds trust out of the organization that says those dirty, rotten scoundrels are going to hide $2.5 million, and therefore I'm going to vote no. We think this language takes care of that. I've passed it by the assessors. They seem to be fine with it. I don't believe that it should cause a great deal of consternation. Hopefully it helps other Timber counties. There's a number that are Klamath County, Josephine County, are bringing measures forward in May, probably too late for at least the measure in Josephine County. But nonetheless, it is language that would sort of do away with any sort of concern over what is in your informational materials versus what's actually on your ballot question.
Any questions or comments? Okay, thank you so much. Okay, we'll close a public hearing on House Bill 2635 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2176. Erin, could you explain the measure?
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2176 is the large omnibus bill coming from the Elections Division regarding a number of technical changes to election statutes. So bear with me for a moment as I go through them all. It removes requirement that person elected to county office provide county clerk with certificate of election, permits certain election documents to be filed electronically, changes certain ballot markings from presidential only to federal only, alters certain filing dates, removes requirement that signature sheets for initiative or referral petition be attached to full and correct copy of measure, requires Secretary of State to establish process for modifying petition templates, requires that one copy of prospective initiative and referral petition be sent to required officials rather than two, permits district attorney to make clerical corrections to ballot title for district measure, requires all estimates, portraits, statements, and arguments for voters' pamphlets to be filed electronically, makes candidate statement for voters' pamphlet subject to prohibition on and penalties for false publication. There is an emergency clause on this measure.
Okay, Brenda Bays, please. And friend.
Rochelle Altman, Legislative Director in the Secretary of State's office, just in case there are any questions that would be more appropriate for me to answer.
Welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Vice Chair Gillum. For the record, my name is Brenda Bays. I'm the Deputy Director for the State Elections Division. I would go through each section of here, and I'll try to make it as painless as possible for you. There's quite a few sections, so I'll briefly summarize those sections. Because there have been no comprehensive election law rewrites in decades, amendments to the election law have proceeded in kind of a piecemeal fashion. As a result, there are many election law provisions of Oregon revised statutes that lack clarity or are inconsistent. House Bill 2176 makes technical amendments to state election laws to improve the clarity and consistency issues, and I'll briefly summarize those for you. Section 1 removes the requirement that a person elected to county office provides a county clerk with the certificate of elections, and it removes the requirement that the oath of office is attached to the certificate of election. This is simply because the counties already have a copy of this information, don't need another copy for their records. Section 2 simply provides that certain election documents may be received by electronic mail. Section 3 and 4 allows a county to use a federal-only ballot for someone who is voting for presidential only. Currently, the counties have they already have a federal-only ballot, and they're making another ballot, which is presidential only. This helps them only have the federal-only ballot. Section 5 alters the deadline for major political parties to notify the Secretary of State to follow or not follow the provisions of ORS 248.012 to 248.315 regarding the elections of precinct committee people. In addition, it provides a time frame in which they must file their organizational documents with the Secretary of State's office. Currently, they have to file this document on one specific day. We're just giving them a week's time frame to do so. Section 6 alters the deadline in which the Secretary of State verifies that the party has maintained the status of their major political party. Section 7 requires all candidate filings to be filed electronically using the ORSTAR system. Currently, we get them, they can file by paper and electronically. Section 8 changes the deadline for a candidate to file for office in the event of a vacancy in a partisan elective office that occurs after the 80th day and before the 70th day before the election. Sections 9, 10, and 11 changes the deadline for a candidate to withdraw their candidacy or nomination for a primary or general election from the 67th day to the 63rd day prior to the election. Currently, there is no ability for a candidate filing for a partisan vacancy at a primary or general election to withdraw after the 67th day. This will allow them the opportunity to withdraw. Section 12 removes the requirement that petitioners circulating a sponsorship petition have their full text of the petition attached. Currently, when they're doing a prospective petition, they have to have the text of the measure attached to each signature sheet. This brings this in line with all other petitions where they just have to carry a full copy for someone to review when asked. Section 13 removes the requirement that petition circulators circulating a petition for incorporation of a territory, also, they do not have to have it attached. They just have to carry a full copy of the petition. Section 14 provides that the Secretary shall establish rules in which chief petitioners of a state initiative or referendum petition want to modify their signature sheets and cover sheets. Section 15 changes the deadline in which by which a certified ballot title must be provided by the Attorney General's office if comments are received or if comments aren't received. This is a little confusing for citizens. It's dependent upon whether comments are filed on a ballot title or whether they're not filed. The time frame of either of those is one day difference, so we're just making them consistent. Section 16 to 21 just reduces the copies provided on a draft ballot title from 2 to 1. Section 22 allows for a district attorney to correct clerical errors for district initiative referendum and referrals. This just brings this consistency with all other initiatives. Currently, in past legislative sessions, we have made these corrections for counties, for cities, and for state initiatives. We're just bringing in the district initiatives as well. Section 23 requires that statements filed by the Citizen Review Panel are filed electronically using the ORSTAR system, such as all other state voter pamphlet filings are filed with our office. Mm-hmm. Sections 24 and 26 provide a no sooner than date for political party statements and for people to file arguments in support or opposition to a state measure. Section 25 are just technical and clarifying cleanup language. Section 27 provides that false statements made by a candidate submitting a voter pamphlet statement by or on behalf of a candidate are subject to 260-532, and that's the statute that you have to file in circuit court if you believe someone has made a false statement in the bottom portion of the voter's pamphlet statement. Sections 28 and 29 clarifies the exception in which a candidate's name may appear on the ballot in more than one place. Currently, there's a statute that says a candidate's name may only appear in one spot on the ballot. However, there are some non-lucrative offices or small fire district candidates in small towns that are allowed to file for those offices and a lucrative office at the same time. Section 30 provides that the district elections authority must include with their filing with the county elections office when they're going to have a district measure on the ballot. They must have the ballot title process complete when they file with the county elections office. Section 31 provides that the district elections authority shall determine the results of the election no later than 40 days after the election. Section 32 provides that the city elections official shall canvass the vote on each city measure no later than the 40th day after the measure. These two sections are needed because of write-in candidates and the acceptance of those write-in candidates so that the counties and the cities have time to accept those write-in candidates accepting the office, and then they certify the elections. Section 33 clarifies that the treasurer of a political committee, including a petition committee, is liable for any violations of campaign finance activities or transactions filed in the OrgStar system. Section 34 allows a candidate who has exceeded the $750 threshold to file a certificate of election once they go over that. Currently, if you go over the $750 threshold to file a committee, you were not able to file a certificate of election. You just had to start filing transactions, each transaction in the OrgStar system. This allows someone who goes over that amount to file a certificate of limited contributions if they believe they will not go over $3,500 in receiving contributions and expenditures. Sections 35 and 36 changes the time frame in which a contribution received must be deposited into the campaign account from 7 calendar days to 7 business days. This was asked of us because of the post office issues. It's taking longer for the mail to get to certain places. Section 37 clarifies that statements of independent expenditures must be signed and certified as true by the candidate treasurer, designee of the candidate or treasurer, or person who has filed the statement. Section 38 requires petition committees to report initial assets that have occurred prior to them creating a committee in the OrgStar system, just as other petition committees are already required to do. Section 39 allows the secretary to notify a committee by electronic means, email, when issuing proposed penalty notices, along with the mail issue. Section 40 allows the secretary to notify a candidate electronically if their name will not be placed on the ballot for failure to file campaign finance transactions in OrgStar. Section 41 repeals ORS 247-435. This statute is not needed because the requirement in this statute is already a federal law for the National Voter Registration Act of 1993. That statute allows for an elector to vote once at their last place of residence. And Section 42 and 43 is just the implementation of all of these changes. I do want to advise the committee of one final note. The Secretary of State's office plans to submit amendments to the request for this bill, as we have identified a few other technical fixes that would improve the clarity and consistency of the laws. We assure you that these are technical changes, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have regarding this bill.
Yes, Representative Wilson.
Madam Chair, I don't have a question right now, but really more of a statement here, in that we have established a track record so far of rushing election law through this committee. I'm really hoping that we take some time with this because this bill is an absolute behemoth. And when I look at Section 3 on the federal ballot, you know, you have to just stop and think for a moment, especially as you look back to Rajneeshpuram back in our earlier history, what can happen in things like this. There are just so many things, so many changes that some seem housekeeping but may not be. I hope that we can really take the time with this in committee to discuss this over a period of time because of the complexity. It's just huge. I need to spend some quality time with my county clerk to talk about some of these things because some of these things are highly nuanced. And so I hope we can really take our time with this.
Representative Wilson, thank you very much. This is a public hearing. This is the initial hearing. This is traditionally the Secretary of State does have an omnibus technical fix bill of which this is. As this is the first time we're hearing it, unlike some of the other election laws that we've heard in this committee that have had a lot of process, we haven't had time to process. And I agree with you 100% that we should take the time to go through each of these things because when we're going to change election law, it's important that we do it once, we do it right. And thank you very much. And we look forward to seeing you again in front of our committee. And Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a specific question. I'm just making sure I understand. Section 28 is a reference to circumstances where a candidate may successfully hold more than one office or nomination without violating a certain statute. There are a number of members of the legislature who hold more than one office. Senator Beyer is also on the board of Willamette Lane Park and Recreation District. Representative Johnson is a member of the school board. There are others. I'm assuming this is the kind of thing you're talking about.
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, that's correct.
Right. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments? Okay. Thank you so much. We have also Tim Scott and Daniel Luco, who would like to testify. Do you need to testify?
Yeah, 2178.
Oh, 2178. Sorry. All right. Please identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tim Scott. I'm the Director of Elections for Multnomah County, here today representing the Oregon Association of County Clerks. And I won't go over all those points of that bill again. Just wanted to say that the Oregon Association of County Clerks has reviewed this bill and does support the provisions of it. And we've provided some written testimony that talks about some specific issues that are more important to us than some of the others. But the bill has been thoroughly reviewed by the Clerks Association and we support the bill. So if you have any additional questions from the point of the clerks, I'd be happy to answer them.
Fantastic. Thank you. Any questions from the committee?
I've got a quick question.
Yes. Vice Chair Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since you're here, I'm glad that you are. Look at Section 12. If you don't have a comment, that's fine, but I'm wondering what the problem is there. You need a cheat sheet like I do, don't you? I don't blame you. While she's coming, it just says, removes the requirement that petition circulators have a copy of the petition attached. So maybe this is not a big deal. I just don't understand what the problem is of having a copy attached when you're circulating.
Representative Hoyle, or Chair Hoyle, Vice Chair Gilliam, I'm not exactly sure specifically what the issue is with having the petition, a full copy of the petition attached to each signature sheet.
We can call up Ms. Bays again from the Secretary of State's office if you would like to get that question answered.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You can just stay in.
Madam Chair, Vice Chair Gilliam, the issue with that is currently they are required to have attached, stapled to each signature sheet, the full text of the measure. So this would alleviate that and allow them just to carry a full copy of the text for people to review upon request. Once the signature sheets are submitted to our office, we actually have to take those apart. each sheet, we have to take the text off of those sheets. And it's, as you're probably aware, thousands and thousands of copies. Currently, the initiative petitions, once it goes past the prospective petition stage, they don't have to have it attached to their signature sheets currently. Mm-hmm. They just have to carry a full copy of the text.
Thank you for that answer, and that helps me understand the problem. It's a logistical one, and I appreciate that. I wonder or worry, I have at least a little concern about the transparency. Not that you're purposely trying to hide the full measure, but if it's not available, are there some folks who would normally peruse that would otherwise just sign it? I don't know. I don't know how much I'm worried about it, but I certainly appreciate your answer.
And Ms. Bays, so what you're saying is that this would mean that you wouldn't have to have the full text of the measure on the back of every signature sheet, but would the requirements still be in place that you would have to have a copy of the measure present for anybody that wanted to see it?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you so much. And with that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2176 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2178. Erin, could you please describe the measure?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2178 requires campaign finance statement to be filed within 2 business days if aggregate amount of contribution equaling or exceeding $2,500 from single donor is received during 14-day period immediately preceding the election. It adjusts other filing deadlines for campaign finance statements and declares emergency effective upon passage. We have no revenue impact. The fiscal impact has not been issued yet.
Rachel Altman, come on down. We should have just had you. Oh, and friend. When you're ready, identify yourself for the record.
Chair Hoyle, members of the committee, my name is Rochelle Altman, and I serve as Legislative Director to the Secretary of State. Thank you for this opportunity to testify in support of House Bill 2178. This bill increases the transparency of large contributions in the final 2 weeks leading up to an election. A version of this bill has been introduced numerous times in past legislative sessions. As I'm sure you're aware, Oregon is one of the few states where we do not have campaign contribution limits, and for this reason, we've worked very hard to achieve a high level of transparency in our state campaign finance system. However, there are still gains to be made, and this bill addresses one of the loopholes that currently exists. Specifically, large campaign contributions are currently made in the final 2 weeks before an election, but current reporting deadlines sometimes allow large contributions to not be reported until after Election Day. Moreover, it has come to my office's attention that political committees sometimes ask their treasurers to exercise their right to use the full reporting window and wait until after Election Day to report larger contributions. And so as a result, It is frequently the case that Oregonians must vote their ballot without the knowledge of some of the largest political funders during those last few weeks. Secretary Brown believes that Oregonians have the right to know who has been making significant contributions to political candidates prior to casting their ballot, and this bill addresses that right and increases the transparency of larger contributions during those final 2 weeks. At the same time, Secretary Brown and this bill are sensitive to the capacity of smaller political committees to meet accelerated reporting requirements. So how would House Bill 2178 change the current reporting deadlines? I want to first note that this bill is a rewrite of provisions from House Bill 3523A and Gross from 2013. which was in turn a rewrite of past legislation, with one exception. And that is that House Bill 2178 has a threshold that triggers two-day reporting of an aggregate $2,500 instead of an aggregate $1,000 that was in the 2013 bill. House Bill 2178 will move up deadlines for political committees to report larger aggregate contributions made by a single donor during the final 2 weeks before an election. Specifically, contributions totaling an aggregate $2,500 or more must be reported within two business days under the bill, as opposed to being reported within 7 calendar days. House Bill 2178 also gives authority to the Secretary of State to establish by rule reporting deadlines for contributions leading up to special elections. And that is the extent of the two-day reporting provisions of this bill. In response to stakeholder concerns in 2013 regarding the ability of smaller volunteer political committees to meet reporting deadlines, this bill moves out certain reporting deadlines. For the period of the 42nd day prior to the election to Election Day, House Bill 2178 would move out reporting deadlines for all contributions, expenditures, and independent expenditures, moving it out from 7 calendar days to 14 calendar days, unless, of course, the two-day reporting provisions for contributions applies. This means that House Bill 2178 moves out the reporting deadlines for smaller aggregate contributions, those that fall under that $2,500 threshold, moving the reporting period from 7 days to 14 calendar days. A final note, Secretary Brown is not wedded to the specific threshold of $2,500 that triggers two-day reporting in the current bill. Some stakeholders that support the kind of transparency that this bill would further have suggested that they would like a higher threshold, while other stakeholders have suggested they would like a lower threshold. And so I would encourage you to have further conversations regarding that threshold. We are certainly flexible on that point. So I want to thank you again for the opportunity to discuss House Bill 2178. I am happy to answer any questions, and Brenda Bay is our Deputy Elections Director, is also here to be a resource.
Thank you, Rochelle. Questions, comments? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Chair Hoyle. Just one question. In that Secretary Brown will no longer be Secretary here in a couple of days, and there will be a new Secretary of State. My question is, to a degree unknowable at this point in time, but do you expect that her successor in that position will also be flexible on some of the numbers and so forth?
I would anticipate that. I know she is working hard to find someone who will share similar interests and passion for transparency and campaign finance.
Follow up. I wasn't here last time around, 2013. What did happen to that bill back in 2013?
It was the provisions for two-day reporting were amended towards the very end of the process in the Ways and Means Committee, and I believe it was because there were concerns that smaller volunteer political committees would not be able to meet two-day reporting. And so I would note this time around, because there is a higher threshold, there will be fewer transactions that would have that accelerated two-day reporting deadline.
Yeah, I think my issues would be with the smaller committees, you know, that have such trouble with things like that. Yeah, thank you.
And Ms. Altman, wasn't it the case that last time that this provision was part of a larger bill, and this was during the Ways and Means process eliminated because of the reasons that you stated, but it was part of a much larger process? So what I want to say is I appreciate the fact that there is a focus for this, because it is vitally important. We do have smaller committees. We do have, you know, I think we all want transparency. So being able to focus on this exclusively, I think it's a better process, and I expect that we will have many conversations. We will be, this bill is not moving today, so we will have a lot of time to talk about it and see how we can make it better and gain support.
Chair Hoyle, you are correct, and Brenda Bays, you may be able to correct me, but I believe it was part of a bill that required independent expenditures to be filed electronically using the ORSTAR system. Previously, they were filed with our office, but it was in a form that was less accessible to the public.
Thank you. I saw somebody's hand down here. Representative McLean.
Thank you. I'm trying to see in the bill if this bill would include independent expenditures.
Chair Hoyle, Representative McLean, as the bill is currently drafted, there would not be two-day reporting triggered for independent expenditures or expenditures. However, I believe Secretary Brown or her successor, that is a point that where there is flexibility. I think the intent why independent expenditures weren't included in this bill, at least last time around, is because, as I mentioned, independent expenditures were not filed using the ORSTAR system, and we do want to find a good compromise between having increased transparency, particularly for larger contributions, but not creating such a burden on political committees that they can't meet the deadlines. And if stakeholders, political committees, felt that it would in fact be easier to have accelerated reporting deadlines across contributions, expenditures, and then independent expenditures filers to just have the same rules apply across the board, we would certainly be open to that. And so I think as written, it's targeted at contributions because there is the concern that it's particularly important for voters to know who is funding political campaigns when voting, whereas expenditures, you see the advertisement and you often know where it's coming from, who is funding it.
Okay, so let me throw out a hypothetical just to understand it. If, hypothetically speaking, my name is Blue Party, and my primary funding comes from public employee unions. They spend money independently and then report in-kind contributions. Are they held to the same standard as, say, Red Political Party, who gets $5,000 by a mother with two kids running a single business?
Chair Hoyle, Representative McLean, I want to distinguish between independent expenditures and in-kind contributions. So an in-kind contribution, if there was some kind of coordination, if the candidate's committee, the candidate that was benefiting, if they were notified that this expenditure would be made for their benefit, that would be considered an in-kind contribution. And under Oregon statutes, it's just a subtype of contribution. And so that would fall under two-day reporting requirements if the threshold was met. Whereas if an expenditure was not coordinated and was under the statutory definition of an independent expenditure, in that case, as the bill is currently written, two-day reporting could not be triggered.
So can I give an actual example? So for instance, the mail piece that I got in my mailbox on Saturday came from a group not affiliated with either of our parties, but a group called Session Watch, about a bill that we're going to vote on. Now that is an independent expenditure because they did not affiliate with the Republican Party or the Democratic Party or anyone here in this building. That is an independent expenditure because it was done independently of any campaign. In fact, it was done when there wasn't even a campaign time. So it wouldn't be an in-kind contribution because even if it was someone of a like mind on the particular bill they talked about, they weren't working with them to actually do that for them. It was independent of anyone else in any other campaign. So that's independent. But if they did it at the behest of my good friend Representative Gilliam or Representative Barbara Smith Warner, they would have to in-kind it to them, and that would be under the same rules as any other kind of contribution, whether it was cash or a mailer done for somebody, right?
Chair Hoyle, that is correct.
Okay. corner. I just wanted to make sure I had that right.
Thank you for that current example.
If I could, I just wanted to ask Vice Chair Warner, when this happens, do you mind reporting it for us?
Not at all.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Yes, Representative Wilson.
Chair Hoyle, thank you. So then if somebody is really concerned about watching the expenditures closely here, they would probably want to wait until Election Day itself to hand carry their ballot into the county clerk's office so they can catch all of the contributions right up to the last minute before election.
That is correct, although the bill would also give more transparency for people who are, even if someone is submitting their ballot during the week prior to the election, because right now contributions during the last 2 weeks, contributions must be reported within 7 calendar days. And so even just having the 2-day reporting within those 2 final weeks would increase transparency for people voting throughout that 2-week period, not just on the final day. But yes, you are correct that if someone wanted maximum transparency under 2-day reporting, you would wait until the very end to submit your ballot.
Okay, thank you.
All right, any other questions or comments? Thank you. And we have a couple of other people to testify on this bill. Cappy Eaton and Daniel Lukow.
Chair Hoyle, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Cappy Eaton. I'm the governance coordinator for the League of Women Voters of Oregon, and I'm here in support of this bill. The bill in 2013 was complicated, and this one is much simpler, much less complicated, and much more to the point. We feel that this is another piece in our election system that provides another for more transparency and disclosure of financial contributions to the candidates in public office, as all of you are. Since the state has no dollar amounts in giving money to candidates, giving access to the public about late donors is essential. It's all about the public's right to know. The League recognizes that election procedures and information are critical elements to an informed and participating electorate. The state has an obligation, we feel, to provide voters with accurate information so that they can make reasoned choices. The ORSTAR system makes tracking financial contributions and expenditures readily available, but the current disclosure of significant monetary donations makes the reporting system more accountable as a few weeks rather than a few weeks prior to the election. The League supports measures to improve methods of financing political campaigns in order to ensure the public's right to know, combat corruption and undue influence, as well as to enable candidates to compete more equitably for public office and promote citizen participation in the political process. House Bill 2178 is another tool in the efforts to make elections fair and to call attention to the increasing problems we have with money in politics. The League strongly supports moving House Bill 2178 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We feel very strongly that the public rights to know is promoted by House Bill 2178. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Vice Chair, members of the committee, my name is Daniel Lukow, and I am the political director for Common Cause Oregon. I just want to start by saying Common Cause Oregon supports House Bill 2178, which would update our disclosure laws to expose and highlight large donations in the final weeks of our election. As you know, HB 2178 would change the 7-day reporting period for larger donations. People might think that most of donations come in well before the final weeks of general and primary elections, but in the 2014 elections, there were 2,605 contributions that made it to the candidates and political committees in the final days of the elections. Because of 7-day reporting, donations made after October 29th were only reported in the day following the election. And under this bill, were it to pass, donations made on November 2nd would have been reported in time for people who are still waiting for the polls to close. Within that time frame of October 29th to November 2nd, donations over $2,500 alone totaled $1.8 million worth of direct contributions and $772,000 from in-kind donations. That's $2.5 million that did not show up in the last election and would have appeared had we had this law. Disclosure is a popular, effective tool and allows Oregon to once again be a leader on these issues. HB 2178 would add disclosure and shine a light on the $2.5 million that went unseen in the last election. Oregon has always been a pioneer when it comes to disclosure laws, and Common Cause supports HB 2178 to let Oregon continue to be a national leader. Thank you.
Thank you both for being here. Are there any questions or comments at this time from our panel? No, I mean from our dais. Thank you both. I'd like to close the public hearing on House Bill 2178. And if there are no other comments by members of the committee, no motions to re-vote on bills we may have already voted on, I guess not. With your permission, Madam Vice Chair, I will adjourn the committee. The committee is adjourned.
All right.
The committee is adjourned.
All right.